As always, it's Thursday, so let's do some. I mean, it's not always Thursday, but as always, on Thursdays, we're going to do some parsha before we get started with regular shiur. So, in Parsha Shoftim, towards the end of the parsha, we have the parsha of Egla Arufa. And, you know, this is the basis of the concept of a Mevarer in Shas called a Karov, or Mevarer in Tanakh, right? The whole Sugin Sagbar Gubba Basra, or the Rov of Karov, which is a fascinating topic that there exists such a Sugya because we have Rov everywhere and we never really seem to follow Karov, and yet the Gemara struggles with which is the greater Mevarer. Is Rov or Karov the greater Mevarer? So, where do we see Karov as an Inyan? Because it says that the Beis Din of the city that's closer to the dead body comes out and performs the Egla Arufa procedure, which includes part of the procedure is this declaration of innocence on behalf of the Beis Din. That the Beis Din says, "Yadenu lo shafchu es hadam hazeh," we did not murder this guy. Ki'ilu, there was a suspicion that the Beis Din did murder this guy. So that alone is difficult. Why they need to say "Yadenu lo shafchu es hadam hazeh"? But then beyond that, "Ve'einenu lo ra'u," and our eyes did not see. And that's a little bit of a strange comment. What does seeing have to do with the guilt or innocence of a community, of the leaders of a community in a murder case? Meaning, it's not, are they saying we didn't see someone commit the murder and stay quiet about it and fail to judge him for the murder? Meaning, what exactly is "einenu lo ra'u" referring to? Another of the topics discussed in the parsha is the iser of a judge, the iser of a shofet, of a dayan, to accept a shochad, to accept a bribe of any kind. What do I mean of any kind? Really, really of any kind. The Gemara at the end of Maseches Ksuvos and Daf Kuf Hei gives examples of things that would qualify as a bribe. It's not only, you know, cash under the table that qualifies as a bribe. The Gemara gives examples that are shocking. The Gemara says that it tells the story of the time that a man helped Shmuel off of the ferry boat. Shmuel was on a ferry, and you know when you get off the boat and you're a little like unbalanced and like there's that gap and you want to, right? So Shmuel, he needed a hand. He needed someone just, you know, hold his hand as he was getting off the boat. He's probably an elderly rabbi, so he held on to the guy's hand. And Shmuel said, okay, now I can't be a dayan for this guy, because the guy held his, you know, helped him hold steady coming off of a boat. Yeah, that's also a bribe, even though the guy didn't intend it as a bribe. He wasn't saying, oh, now you bet I was nice to you, you know, remember, now you got to be nice to me. There was no such deal. A Mamer once had a feather land on his head, and a guy removed it for him. He said, oh, you got something on your jacket over there, and took it off for him. And a Mamer said, okay, now I can't judge this guy's case. Meaning, you're talking to the rabbi, and you're like, hey, you got a little spinach in between your teeth. Oh, thanks. And he takes it out. So, okay, now it can't be a dayan, because you saved me the embarrassment, because I have spinach between my teeth. The Gemara doesn't give the spinach example, but it's along the same lines. So you have to wonder, like, why is it that we have so little confidence in the Gedolei Amoraim, so little confidence in people who are dayanim, that they don't have even like this much integrity? They don't even have the integrity to look past a little tiny favor that someone did them, that someone did for them, that we assume that such tiny favors are going to ya'aver enichamim, right? That it's going to blind them, and all of a sudden they're going to judge cases in the wrong way. These are men that we assume are men of extraordinary integrity. Why would something so minor corrupt their judgment? And then a third thing that comes up in the parasha is Nevi'ei Sheker. In Navi, there are actually many, many cases of Nevi'ei Sheker, and the Nevi'ei Sheker were a real problem in the Jewish community, and it's not so much a problem anymore because we have no Nevi'ei Emes, so when there are no Nevi'ei Emes, there's less risk of Nevi'ei Sheker, because any time someone wants to be a Nevi'ei Sheker, everyone immediately writes them off as a kook, right? But in the days of Nevi'ei Emes, Nevi'ei Sheker was a real thing, it was a real Inyan, it was a real threat to the Jewish people. Yirmiyahu, like for example, when Yirmiyahu and Navi was in business, he had lots of competition, meaning there were lots of Nevi'ei Sheker that were also, it was working for him. They also wanted to hang out a shingle and say, you know, we're in the Navi business and we're in fact Nevi'ei Sheker. Now, the Minchas Chinuch, Mitzvah Tavkuf Yedzayin Os Ches, says that a person is only a Navi Sheker if he's somebody that's shayach to be a Navi and would be believable as a Navi. And Michtam Eliyahu in Chelek Dalid, Rav Dessler writes on page 289, he says, he doesn't understand. He says, how could it be possible that a Talmud Chacham, a respected, normal, and stable person, would be a Navi Sheker? I mean, the Cheskinuch just narrowed the field of Navi Sheker to people who it's plausible that they would be a Navi. Think about that. How many people that you know, is it plausible that they would be a Navi? Probably a very, very limited group. And for some reason, I think of Tversky, right? It's plausible, right? So how many people is it plausible that they would be a Navi? Now, can you imagine, of that very limited group of people, that it's plausible that they'd be a Navi, that they would then just be a Navi Sheker? They would then, like, say things that Hashem didn't say? They would start reporting things in the name of God that were not told to them? You know, it's not some kook on the street corner saying that he's been hearing voices. You know, when you're trying to get off the Harlem River, you know, the guy there. That's not what this is. These are very respected people. This is a person who's a known entity, big Talmud Chacham. How did you get to become a Navi Sheker? So three unrelated questions, and we'll see if we can relate them. But number one, what does Einenu Lo Ra'u in the Parsha of Egla Rufa mean? What were they supposed to see that they didn't see? Number two, what is it about Shochad that even such a minor, tiny, tiny little motivation of, you know, they remove the feather is going to change their whole outlook and their whole way of judging a case? And number three, Nevi'e Sheker. Why is it that anyone would ever be a Navi Sheker, considering the prerequisite to being a Navi Sheker that Michas Chinuch lays out, that you have to be someone who would be plausible, that would be a Navi MS. So to answer the first question, the Mishnah and Sota already anticipated the first question about what Einenu Lo Ra'u means. And the Mishnah explains that they mean to accept moral responsibility for failure to accompany the fellow out of town. We didn't see this guy all alone and not, you know, take care of him a little bit, not walk him out of the city. We didn't let him just be a loner. And that's Einenu Lo Ra'u. Not that Einenu Lo Ra'u, we didn't see a murderer and let him go. It's just the warmth that needed to be shown to this guy. We didn't ignore his presence. And Rabbi Lam has a drasha from many decades ago where he writes, and I'll read you his lashon because he always says things so beautifully. Where he writes, Chazal realized with their incredible insight into human nature that it's likely that this man was unable to resist his attacker because he had left the town demoralized. When a person is not feeling good about himself, those feelings of worthlessness become a self-fulfilling prophecy. The Zakenim failed to walk the man out onto the road and failed to give him the impression that his presence in the community was important to them and that his leaving saddened them. They simply did not take any notice of him. And it is courage, the knowledge of a man that he is backed by his fellows, that is necessary for a man to put up a fight against killers in the night who fall upon him with murder in their hearts. Without this encouragement, this knowledge that he means something to someone, a man's resistance to his attacker is nil, and he falls by the wayside, dead. And when a community has thus sinned against the lonely stranger in its midst, it must accept full moral guilt for his murder. And the elders must announce in shame, these hands did not spill this blood, and these eyes did not see. Do you know how the rabbis would translate that? No, we did not murder him with our very hands, but nevertheless, we admit that our hands are stained with his blood because our eyes did not see. We were blind to his existence, indifferent to him. We overlooked him. We failed to encourage him and inspire with the dignity of being a man among men. Our hands are stained because our eyes were clouded. So beautifully put. Meaning what he's essentially saying is that when you notice somebody, when you pay attention to somebody, when you express a little bit of warmth to another person, the person feels like they're worth something. And when a person has a sense of self-worth, that confidence changes his entire mahus. It changes the way he goes through his day. It changes the way he interacts with other people. It makes him, you know what they say, like why it's so important to, let's say, have a security guard in front of a shul, right? Because when
when a terrorist is looking for a target, Rahman al-Aslan, they always look for the weakest target, because why would they want to face any resistance if they could face zero resistance? So if there's eight shuls on the block, which, you know, in Muslim communities, right, there's eight shuls on the block, so they'll you know, canvas the street, drive up and down the street, and six of them have a security guard, so they'll go to the shul that doesn't have a security guard, right? They'll go to the weakest target. When Rahman al-Aslan, when a predator is looking for someone to take advantage of, right? They look for the weakest target. They look for someone who doesn't have a support system, someone who's nabucha yasom, someone who has comes from a family where he's not going to have the love and the moral support. In all likelihood, those are the most vulnerable people, and they're vulnerable because there's no one to take care of them. There's no sense of self, and that's always the people that are most vulnerable. If a person is walking around with self-confidence, if a person is walking around with a sense of self-worth, that they're less vulnerable to people coming after them. They're less vulnerable to being attacked. That einenu lo ra'u means that if we saw this person and we paid attention to him and we were mechabed him and we noticed a new guy in shul, so we gave him an aliyah, and, you know, people said shalom aleichem. We noticed a new guy in yeshiva and we said, oh, you're new here. Do you need anything? Is there anything, you know, you found a makom? Is everything okay? You notice the person. You just notice that the person is there. Then it changes their whole mahus. It changes the way they carry themselves, and they become less likely to be a victim of such a crime. And therefore, the Beis Din has to say einenu lo ra'u, and I think that message of trying to make sure that the people around us have that confidence, have that, you know, to just always look to say something nice to a person, always look to try to you know, I got a call last night I got a call from a Talmud of mine from, I don't know, he's probably from 15 years ago, I guess, or maybe 12, 13, I don't know, he must be 30 now, he's a lawyer, whatever, from years ago in DRS, and like, he's dealing with an issue, so he asked, you know, he thought that I might be able to help, so we spoke for a little bit, and then at the end he's like, you know what I think about sometimes? I said, why? He's like, remember in Fridays in Shir, we used to have like just an open Q&A. It's like a typical high school rugby thing to do. Like, I just can't teach anymore. we used to do a Q&A. So, he said, I remember, like, and there was something I said about him or something I said to him that, like, he's thinking about 15 years later. And he says, I still think about that from time to time. And, like, it hits you that a small comment to be mechazik someone, a small something to give it, and it changes just the way a person thinks about themselves. It changes their self-perception. And that's impactful. And we cannot look back in retrospect and say, einenu lo ra'u. We have to open our eyes. We have to make sure that new faces get a lot of shalom aleichems, and you know, that make sure that the people around us seem like they're walking around with a bounce in their step, with a certain sense of confidence. The importance of leaving people with a positive taste and a pleasant experience when they cross paths with us, and, you know, whether it be on an individual level or on a communal level, is very, very critical. Positive feelings have a ripple effect on a person's life, and they tend to multiply exponentially. Rav Palm explained that the reason we're so strict with the definition of a bribe, that it can cloud judgment, even among the judgment of the greatest Amoraim, even if it's the tiniest bribe, it's not a reflection of a lack of trust in rabbinic integrity. It's not a reflection of, oh, we don't believe in our rabbis. It's a reflection of just how strong even the slightest positive interaction can be. That just how strong an interaction of, yeah, it bothers me that you should walk around with an embarrassing feather on your head that fell on your head, and therefore I care about your dignity, so I'm going to do something about it. The level of hakaras hatov that a person should feel when somebody does something so minor as to remove a feather from his jacket or open a door for him or help him off a boat should be such that we see ourselves as being unfit to be a dayan in their case. And we convince ourselves sometimes that, yeah, it is nice. I agree that it's nice to hear something nice. It's not about, you know, and it's nice to, when I love it when other people say something nice to other people and they have, you know, these kinds of interactions. But, you know, that's just not me. I'm a nice person, but I'm shy. I just, look, I'm a nice person. I just don't do nice things. You know, like I'm a shy person. I'm not the kind of person. You know, you reminded me of Rabbi Sif, right? You're very close to Rabbi Sif. My wife told me she was in Walmart. In you know this Maisa? Rabbi Sif is Rabbi in after middle school. So my wife was in Walmart once in the summertime, and Rabbi Sif was in front of. Maybe she wasn't in Walmart, or someone just told her this Maisa. Someone else. Rabbi Sif was in Walmart. You know, buying stuff, and he was talking to the checkout lady in the Walmart upstate. You know, not even the checkout, the lady bagging or whatever it was. And he said, "Oh, like, you, how long have you worked here?" And she's like, "I'm actually trying to pay my way through school, so I'm working here because I want to be whatever, a stenographer or something, or a veterinarian. I don't know, whatever. She's trying to work her way through school." And he said, "How long is it going to take you? Like, how much do you get? You know, like." And she's like, "Well, I make X dollars an hour, and I got to put in a lot of hours. But I'm going to save up. I'm determined, and I'm gonna do it." And Rabbi Sif took out $20. And he said, "You should work one less hour. You should have to work one less hour." Now, how do you think that person, now, is the $20 going to make a dent in her life? Probably not, you know, in a serious way. But is that interaction going to make a dent in her life? Yeah, probably in a very serious way. Meaning that the way she comes home and talks to her parents, to her husband, whoever, you know, that day is going to be an entirely different thing. To look for those positive interactions. And it's very easy for us to say, you know, it's not my nature to be outgoing, to be friendly, to ask a stranger if I could do anything to help, to inquire about his life. It feels forced. It feels unnatural. Again, I'm a nice person. I just don't do nice things. And Rav Dessler explains that that's the issue with the Navi Sheker. He's not a bad person. He's a Talmud Chacham. He's a respected enough member of society that people would plausibly believe that he's a Navi. But he's fooled himself. He believes that the messages that he wants to convey are in fact coming from Hashem. And he allows his own nature and his own interests to determine how he lives his life, rather than being receptive to Hashem's actual messages. So just as we can't say that we're putter from tzedakah, because I think tzedakah is great. I'm just naturally stingy. So, you know, like I'm putter from tzedakah. A person can't say that. We can't say, "Look, I think Zman Kriya Shema is awesome. I'm just a late sleeper." You know, so like a person can't say, there's no excuse of like, my nature is such, and therefore I'm putter from a mitzvah. So when it comes to making sure that we have a positive impact on people, making sure we affect that ripple effect of removing the feathers from their jackets and giving them a sense of dignity, we don't have any excuses. We don't have any, "But my nature is not that way." I think that's part of the message of Parsha Shoftim, is that Einenu lo ra'u is never going to be an excuse, because we should realize how much we can impact. If a shochad can make such a tiny, tiny shochad can make such an impact on great chachamim, then it's our responsibility to give to passel as many people from being dayanim for us as we possibly can, by being as kind and as good to people as we possibly can. And unlike a Navi Sheker who sort of sets his own agenda and convinces himself that that's okay to set their own agenda, we allow the Torah Kedosha to set the agenda for us. We allow ourselves to see that what's valuable and what's important in life and what's an important way to behave through the lens of the Torah itself. Okay.